Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a special edition of Revolution Radio. I'm very happy to announce that I've finally worked out the technical details of getting the episode Paradigm Shift on board. This is about the Second Amendment, constitutional governance, some experiences with the gun owners of America, an interview with Michael Badnarik, the president of the Continental Congress 2009. I apologize to my listeners for kind of blowing it in the last few shows, but here we go, because Murphy's Law is still alive and well. I'm going to play Paradigm Shift Episode 1 by Jeff Williams, a Continental Congress delegate from Washington State. It's about a 50-minute show or so. We're just going to play it without break, and we'll be around after the break for a little commentary and some music. If you feel just like downloading the podcast, it actually will work this time. Thanks very much. Here we go. Paradigm Shift.
Do we live in a state of liberty, or do we live in a state of tyranny? Thomas Jefferson said, "When the government fears the people, there is liberty. When the people fear the government, there is tyranny." Unfortunately, he also said the natural progress of things is for liberty to yield and government to gain ground. So in our society, when government agencies just flat out ignore existing law and make up their own on the fly without representation and without recourse, where do we stand? This past month in Austin, Texas, the federal government flexed its muscle and prohibited private party firearms transfers at a local gun show. The problem? There is no law that supports their position. And in fact, current law says that you can. I don't know about you, but I call that tyranny. Joining me today, constitutional activist Michael Bednarik and Eric Pratt from Gun Owners of America. My name is Jeff Williams, and it's time for a paradigm shift.
Sooner or later, you got to draw a line and stand your ground, whether anybody else does or not. That is what liberty is all about.
And now, our nation is drifting dangerously from freedom to fascism.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Those people that have a diametrically opposing point of view than yours, they will figure out the learning curve, they will mail the letters, and they will make the phone calls. They will show up in numbers, they will overwhelm you, because your butt is on the couch thinking that right about now would be a great time for somebody else to go out and fix this problem.
Great principles don't get lost once they come to light. They're right here.
There comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe, not politic, not popular, but he must do it because conscience tells him it is right.
It's a, quote, conspiracy of ideas. This is an ideological battle. Some people believe in globalism. Others of us believe in national sovereignty.
How long is it going to be before you finally resist and say no? I will not comply. Period.
Yeah, we are on a mission. Hey, everybody, my name is Jeff Williams, and welcome to Paradigm Shift. This is episode one. We are a podcast that is going to be bi-weekly at first and possibly increasing in frequency if we get some popularity going. Our goal is to change the way you think, one piece at a time, give you a different perspective, hence the name Paradigm Shift. You can contact us online. My name again is Jeff Williams. My email address, me@commonsensejeff.com. The website is, of course, commonsensejeff.com. We also have a Skype feedback line. You can reach us via Skype or regular telephone, 509-850-3355. That's 509-850-3355. Call us up. If you leave a message, you may hear it on the air. Well, we're going to get right into it. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right to our guests. We have some great guests today, and we are talking about the Second Amendment and this fiasco going on in Austin, Texas. Joining me now on Paradigm Shift is Eric Pratt. He is the Director of Communications for Gun Owners of America. And, Eric, the first question I've got for you is, why am I not a member of your organization?
That's a good question, Jeff.
I'm a life member of the NRA, but I'm looking at some of the positions that they take on some of these gun control issues, and I'm not feeling the resolve. I'm thinking my money might be better spent with you.
Well, there's a reason why Gun Owners of America is here, and we're the only no-compromise group at the national level. And people can easily, and yourself included, go to our website at gunowners.org. That's probably the easiest way to sign up. The other thing I would encourage folks to do is, even if they're not a member, sign up for our free email alerts, because we will keep you up to date with what's happening in Washington. And there has been so much going on this past year. We have been incredibly active fighting all the ridiculous ideas coming out of the White House. So it promises to be another very busy year as well.
And we'll get that information up on our show notes, which can be found online at commonsensejeff.com. So, turning to the thrust of our conversation today, the current administration and gun control. I think it's pretty clear that if you look at Eric Holder, look at his past statements, look at who he is and what he believes and what he has published as believing, if you don't believe that at some point there's not going to be an assault on our Second Amendment rights, you have to be smoking crack. I mean, it's coming. And really, I think there's two different ways to do this. There's a frontal assault, you know, a big push like healthcare. I think that would be political suicide and could potentially even incite violence. Or you've got this concept of the nudge, you know, a little change here and a little change there. It gets us to the same place. It just goes over a longer period of time and without a major initiative to draw attention to things. I personally think that's what's going on now, and I'd like to get your take on it, starting with Austin, Texas.
Yeah, this is a pretty outrageous story. Selling a firearm privately, person to person, is still a constitutional right that in most states you're allowed to do without having to go get permission for doing so. So people can sell a gun from one private person to another, just like you would sell a car, a television, or any other item that you own. Well, apparently what ATF did in conjunction with the Austin Police Department is to get the gun show promoter to put the squeeze, or basically they squeezed the gun show promoter to say that there can be no private sales at the gun show, can't even go out into the parking lot to do it. There was no law that was alluded to. In fact, the flyers that were posted simply said you're going to be asked to do this. But, of course, there's a clear threat behind it when it's the ATF and the Austin Police Department saying that you've got to do this or suggesting that you have to do this. And there's a lot of unanswered questions about this. I mean, supposedly the reason for why they're doing this is because there's illegal sales going on, they say, or illegal immigrants buying guns at Austin gun shows, and so that's why they're saying that. Okay, so we want all these screened. You're going to have to go to a gun dealer to make the sale. Well, of course, you know, if they're really concerned about illegal aliens buying guns, then why aren't the police just arresting these illegal aliens instead of maintaining Austin as a sanctuary city for illegal aliens? I mean, that seems to be a fairly specious argument. The other thing is that there's really no law that the Austin police and the ATF were even alluding to, that there was any law that would force private citizens to have to take this to a gun dealer to run a background check. Texas is not one of the states that requires that. So to answer that question, basically the Austin police said, well, there's a nuisance that's going on. Well, you know, a nuisance is some offense that annoys the whole community in general, you know, not just any particular person. Like, you know, you're keeping farm animals around your house and it's creating a stench or an eyesore, or playing loud music in the middle of the night. I mean, these things are nuisances. Well, what's the nuisance? Even if there are illegal sales, arrest the people who are buying guns illegally. I mean, how is that a nuisance? If you're going to claim that is a nuisance because there's illegal activity going on, then you're going to have to shut down the shopping malls because there's shoplifting that goes on, or you're going to have to shut down car dealers because there's criminals that buy cars to use them as getaway cars. I mean, you see how this is just a tremendous abuse of power, and their arguments don't really hold up for it.
Well, we've got a little audio, and this is Detective T.J. Binyard of the Austin Police Department. And this is what he had to say.
Most of the people who are trying to achieve legitimate sale of firearms or purchase firearms want a certain level of protection. They want to know that the gun they're buying is not stolen. They want to know the person they're selling to is not a convicted felon, is not on parole for murder. And so having some way to do that is actually a benefit to everyone.
Okay, so he apparently thinks that punishing everyone for the actions of a few is an okay thing. Makes complete sense to me. What is your response to the detective?
Well, I think you nailed it on the head, and that is we're going to punish everybody because of what a few are doing wrong. And quite frankly, look, if there is an individual who, in selling a gun, wants that level of protection, then he should go to a gun dealer and sell his gun, and then when that gun dealer sells the gun, there will be a background check run. So that's a specious argument. I mean, if that's what they're concerned about, I mean, there's gun dealers that'll sell secondhand firearms. But they should not be forcing everybody to do this when there is no law to do it. See, just consider what he's doing. He's giving us these supposedly logical arguments for why we need to do this, but they're not appealing to the law. I mean, there is no law that requires this, so to threaten people that way is just simply a form of fascism. I mean, that's just wrong.
Okay, so here he is again, focusing on these so-called illegal transactions, T.J. Binyard of the Austin Police Department.
Every time we were there, we observed transactions that were either questionable or illegal, and so our effort was to find ways to address that.
Okay, so he's there. He's observing illegal transactions. Why is he not arresting the criminals? I don't get it. Here he is. He's trying to enforce a law that doesn't even exist for questionable reasons. Hey, you know, tip to the cops. Do your job. Follow the law. Don't harass law-abiding citizens.
Well, that would be my question. If they know that there's actual illegal activity occurring, then they can be arrested. So, again, it's using that argument to then force everybody. And ultimately, that's what the anti-gun movement wants, is they want all sales registered. They want to know who the firearms owners are. And let's, you know, we should probably explain and be upfront with, why do we oppose background checks anyway? We oppose them because, A, law-abiding citizens shouldn't have to prove their innocence to the government before they exercise a constitutionally protected, God-given right. That's just wrong. We don't do that with other rights. We shouldn't do that with our right of self-defense. But secondly, anytime your name has to be sent to the FBI, John Smith is purchasing a firearm, check him out. That name is punched into the computer. There's always the question, once that name goes into the computer, does it ever come out? Is it ever truly erased? We have found that in many of the states that have run background checks, they have illegally retained the names of gun buyers. So this is a huge problem, this whole aspect of registration. And, of course, we oppose registration because in many countries, and even in our own country, and we've seen this happen in New York City, registration has been used as a prelude to gun confiscation later on. And so we vigorously oppose this and think, you know, this is just a first step towards, you know, trying to implement background checks on all sales without, you know, the legislature having spoken.
Okay, for the last word on this story, let's go to a guy by the name of Darwin Bedeker. He is apparently the guy who is the owner of the show in question, and this is what he had to say.
What they want to do is they want to shut the gun shows down. This just doesn't affect me. This affects you. This affects the person down the road. This affects every law-abiding citizen. Felons are always going to be able to get the guns. That's why they're felons. They don't follow the law.
Okay, and this brings me to my home state, which is Washington State. And I'm starting to connect some of these dots. Maybe prematurely, maybe not, I don't know. But this is why I have you here to tell me if I've got this wrong or if I'm seeing something there. House Bill 2477. This is a bill that seeks to abolish the private transfer of firearms even between family members and friends at gun shows. So it's Austin all over again, but they're actually taking the work to pass the law first. Imagine that. But this is still an assault on my constitutional rights. And what I want to know is, are we going to see this assault now in every state in the union? Are they going to try to backdoor gun legislation this way when we're busy paying attention to the economy, health care, other issues? What do you think?
Well, they are. And, you know, unfortunately, we've got huge threats at the federal level fighting the Obama administration. So tactically, this is a good opportunity for them doing these types of things at the state level. And that's exactly what they're after. You might remember almost 20 years ago, there was a bill introduced. Actually, it may have been a constitutional amendment introduced by Major Owens of New York, stated quite simply what he wanted to do. Repeal the Second Amendment. Now, that amendment or bill, it would have had to have been an amendment, didn't go anywhere, nowhere at all. And yet that right there epitomizes where the anti-gun movement wants to go. I mean, that is really what they're after. And so all these other things, the background checks, the, you know, no private sales, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, all these are just simply ways of nicking around the edges. But ultimately, this is where they're going. A lot of people say, well, what's the big deal with registration? Look, we register cars, you know, cars aren't being confiscated. Well, let's be honest, there is no movement in our country, except maybe a small percentage of real radicals who'd like to, you know, go back to horse and buggy, but nobody's really out to ban cars. That's not the case with firearms. I mean, you just turn on the news, you realize there is a real movement to ban firearms, even repeal the Second Amendment, and so all these efforts have to be seen in that context.
Eric, one of the people that I turn to frequently when addressing constitutional issues is Michael Bidnarik. He's going to be our next guest, and he is very outspoken on gun issues. I thought you might be interested in what he had to say about interpretations of the Second Amendment.
If you think the only determination of the Second Amendment is the opinion of the Supreme Court, then I invite you to be the person standing out in front of my door the day the government comes to take my guns. because you're going to discover that my interpretation of the Second Amendment is the only one that counts.
Okay, so short of the standoff at your front door when someone comes to collect your guns, what can we do in the meantime to stop these efforts to curtail our rights? Again, here in Washington State, we were dealing with SB 6369. Now, this bill is now apparently dead in committee, but listen to this. First off, like most gun bills, the way they try to define assault weapon was crap. But if you have more than 10 rounds in the magazine of your sidearm or your rifle, you're a felon. If you already own a high-capacity firearm, if you want to be quote-unquote grandfathered in, you'd have to consent to an annual inspection by local law enforcement in violation of your Fourth Amendment rights. This thing was outrageous. We have to be vigilant. We have to be aware of these efforts. How do we stop these from happening?
Well, I think that the way we do it is make our voice heard, and that's exactly what happened in the hearing when 300 or more people showed up at the hearing for that. 298 indicated they were opposed to the bill. There was 21 times more people there in opposition than was supporting it. And I think everywhere you go around the country, even when gun control has been on the ballot, it is lost at the ballot. Even in San Francisco years ago, where they wanted to ban handguns, these things have gone down in flames. And so, we just need to make our voice heard. That's exactly what they did there, and just realize that this is going to be a continual battle, state by state, around the country, and at the federal level as well. We're fighting in the socialized health care bill. We are fighting gun control in that bill, where they're trying to put in restrictions as well. So, they are trying to nickel and dime us, and so we've got to be very aware. That's why Gun Owners of America is here, and we've been mobilizing people all year. And again, I would just encourage people to, if they haven't already, sign up for the free email alerts at gunowners.org, gunownerswithans.org.
Okay, so last question. We'll get a little philosophical here. Right to keep and bear arms, probably the most important constitutionally enumerated right, because all other rights kind of fall from it. If you don't have the ability to protect your life and your property, you don't have anything. But it's still one of the most attacked, because guns just make some people nuts. And I'm wondering why that is. Why do guns just make a certain segment of our population insane?
I think they're misinformed, Jeff. And, I ask people all the time, what are you most likely to see on the news, positive use of firearm or negative use? And they say, well, of course, the negative uses of firearms. And yet, firearms are used 80 times more often every day, every month, every year, 80 times more often to save life than take life. And you especially see that. You might remember the case in 1997 where an assistant principal used his firearm to stop a school shooting. Well, that assistant principal was a hero, although he was breaking the law, having that gun there to save people's lives. Well, coast to coast, that made nationwide news for 2 weeks. That's all the talk shows were talking about, was that shooting in Pearl, Mississippi. What's interesting about it is somebody did a LexisNexis search of all the newspapers that covered it, and out of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of newspaper articles that covered that story, every single one of them mentioned that the kid, Luke Woodham, used a gun to shoot and kill students and a teacher. However, less than 10 mentioned that assistant principal Joel Myrick used a gun to stop him. See, that right there is horrible media bias, and that's why a lot of people just soak this in and they only see the negative uses and they think that that's all there is. So, long answer to your question, Jeff, I think it just comes down to people being lied to and misinformed. And you're absolutely right, though. A lot of what drives it is what James Madison said, that the advantage that we have in this country is that the Constitution protects the right to keep and bear arms, whereas in other countries, other governments are afraid to trust the people with arms. And you're right, a tyrannical government does not want the people to be able to own firearms.
Eric Pratt, he's the Director of Communications for Gun Owners of America. Sir, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us today, and thanks for being out in front of these issues.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that's the Gun Owners of America perspective. Let's find out what a constitutional scholar has to say next. Coming up, Michael Badnarik. You've heard him do his Constitution classes online for years. The guy is a constitutional genius. He's checking in next. Don't go anywhere. This is Paradigm Shift. Show notes for this podcast are available. Go to commonsensejeff.com/podcast. If you need to reach me via email, send your stuff to me at commonsensejeff.com. And we do have a comment/feedback/suggestion/rabid insult line, 509-850-3355, 509-850-3355. Say something intelligent and you may end up on the next podcast. Welcome back to Paradigm Shift. My name is Jeff Williams, and joining me on the line now is a good friend of mine, Michael Bednarik. And Michael, thanks for coming on and violating the Patriot Act with me this afternoon.
I'm happy to be on the air with you, and I'm happy to exercise my First Amendment rights wherever I can.
Well, I think the first question a lot of people are going to have for you, since you've gone through quite an event in the last month, is you had a massive heart attack. You had the possibility of leaving us for a bit of time there. Why don't you fill in our listeners about what happened and where you are now?
I was feeling really strong at the end of November, early December. I had been taking all my food supplements, and the last thing I would have expected was a heart attack. I went and gave a political speech in Wisconsin. On the way to lunch, I fell over in the van. Two people gave me CPR and called the paramedics. The paramedics tried to defibrillate me three times, and my heart did not start. The fourth time at the hospital, they finally got my heart beating, airlifted me to Gunderson Lutheran Hospital in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Personally, I feel it's the best hospital in the United States. And they took really good care of me. I was in a chemically induced coma for 16 days. Eventually woke up. I knew who I was. I had no idea what day it was. And I've recovered more quickly and more completely than the doctors imagined was possible. My last echocardiogram indicated that my heart was pumping at near normal levels, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm back to 100% physically and ready to get back on the Liberty Trail teaching my Constitution class.
Well, for those of you in the audience who don't know of Michael, first, what's wrong with you? Secondly, go out and Google Michael Bednarik Constitution class, B-A-D-N-A-R-I-K, and Michael, quite frankly, that happened to me 2-3 years ago, changed my life. How many people do you have come up to you and say, man, you changed my life, you changed the way I think?
It's an amazing number. I am flattered by the number of people who claim that, you know, I influenced their life in such a positive way. I was, you know, simply doing what any self-respecting patriot would do. I happen to have a little bit more background on the Constitution than most. But, you know, we should all feel passionate about our freedom and our liberty. We all have a built-in self-preservation instinct physically, and we should all exercise our self-preservation instinct politically. We should never allow the legislature to violate our rights. But it's important for us to understand what those rights are so that we'll know, you know, when it's time for us to stand up. But yes, there's a high percentage of people who have watched my Constitution class online. You know, people may be interested to know that it was videotaped the Saturday before September 11th. So when I was indicating that, you know, the fabric of society was fragile, little did I know that 96 hours later, it was going to suffer a huge tear.
So let's talk about constitutional violations. I've got one specifically that I want to ask you about. We had Eric Pratt from Gun Owners of America on previous two coming on the program, and we're talking about Austin, Texas. Now, Austin, ironically, Austin is a sanctuary city, which means they do not obey federal immigration law, but they are just fine with violating the constitutional rights of law-abiding citizens by disallowing private party firearms transfers. I think this is pretty serious. What's your take on it?
I was shocked and disappointed. Unfortunately, as far as I was concerned, I was not in Austin at the time. I do know many of my personal friends in Austin were rallying and petitioning against it. Of all of the Bill of Rights, I mean, first of all, if your listeners haven't yet, they should memorize the Bill of Rights. It's a fundamental step in restoring our constitutional republic. And then they should know that alcohol, tobacco, and firearms is a federal agency that spends nearly $1 billion. They spend $900 million each year trying to put gun owners and gun dealers out of business. It is the only federal agency that I'm aware of explicitly designed to eliminate one of the Bill of Rights. As far as I'm concerned, 23,000 gun laws are unconstitutional because they infringe on your rights, and every single member of the Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms Agency are guilty of treason. They have explicitly violated the Constitution, and all of them should be put on trial and potentially serve time in prison.
Now, the owners of the gun show in question, do they have the right to limit what happens on their property? Can they say, you know, this is our property, you can't sell your gun here?
Yes. Property is the one-word answer for every question on the Constitution. All of our rights derive from property, including your right to life. And people say, well, I don't own a farm. And I said, yes, but you own your body. If you don't own your body, it's presumed that someone else does, and that makes you a slave. So we really don't think about it in those terms, but you do own your body. You decide, what food you eat or what liquids you drink. And, you know, taking that to this particular issue, if a person does own the private property, they can decide whether or not you enter the property, whether or not you're able to sell. So private individuals are not limited by the Constitution. Only people working for the government, anybody who's raised their hand to take an oath of office, they've promised to defend the Constitution. Well, we don't send them to the National Archive to stand in front of a piece of paper. They pledge to defend the Constitution, which implicitly means that they're going to protect your life, your liberty, and your property.
So my question is related to that. The BATF could have gone to this gun show owner. Let's assume, and I don't know for a fact, and I probably should have done better research. I'm assuming that this is on private property, not on public property, a privately owned facility. They could have leaned on the gun show owner or the owner of the building and said, we're going to keep this quiet, but we're going to disallow this now, or you're going to be in a world of hurt because we're going to bring the power of the federal government to bear on you for disobeying us. But instead, they were very public. They said, by order of the BATF and the federal government, this is not going to happen. It seems to me that act in and of itself is sending a very specific message.
Absolutely. There is no reason other than sending a message to do this so publicly. The ATF is deliberately trying to, you know, put fear in the hearts of people in Austin. They want people to know that, you know, if you've got a gun, we're going to come down on you. And so with one arrest, the ATF can, you know, basically inhibit through intimidation several hundred, if not several thousand, gun transactions. And they don't have to do anything except make, you know, Americans afraid of what could happen. That's exactly the strategy that Joseph Stalin used in Russia. Anybody that Joseph Stalin was suspicious of disappeared in the middle of the night. And people were afraid to talk. They were afraid to talk to each other. And basically, you know, Joseph Stalin, being the paranoid that he was, I mean, he had thousands of people, you know, disappeared. And this is certainly not as egregious, but it is developed from the same emotional principle.
Well, I think they went right after the jugular as well, because, I mean, I could see something like this happening in my state of Washington, because it's extremely liberal and it's extremely anti-gun in some areas, but happening in your state, in Texas, you got to be kidding me. I was shocked. So I guess the question, Michael, is it going to work? are the citizens of Texas going to be intimidated by this?
Many of them will not. I think this was a really bad long-term decision for the ATF. People in Texas are very proud. We love our state, and you know, we don't believe that everything in Texas is bigger and better, but we are proud. We prefer to be in Texas, and we don't take, we're not going to take this sitting down. In September, I attended a rally at the state capitol favoring secession. There are lots of people in Texas who, you know, we may have friends around the United States, but we would be happy to let the other 49 go their way. And we will become, you know, the sovereign Republic of Texas again. And let me just say that if that happens, I will immediately announce my candidacy for president of Texas, and I hope that all of your listeners will support me in that campaign.
Not only that, but I hope there's a place in your administration for me, Mr. President.
Absolutely. Texas is a big place. We welcome everybody that respects individual rights and private property. And basically the only law, the only gun law in Texas is going to be hit your target. You know, use two hands.
I think this ties perfectly into my last question for you today. This is from, I don't believe it was a Constitution class per se, but it was another lecture that you had had given. Take a listen to this.
We are getting to a point, ladies and gentlemen, in our society where the fabric of society is very, very fragile. If we have another terrorist event, we've already got the Patriot Act, we've already got the Military Commissions Act, we've already got the Real ID Act. If you don't realize that another terrorist attack is very likely to establish martial law, which means we're not even pretending that we have a constitution, this country is going to be in civil war.
Civil war. Those are two really huge words. You still feel that way?
It is still a strong possibility. I am doing everything I can to prevent that. That's why I teach my Constitution class, hopefully to get Americans excited so that we can prevent that. I repeat that this class was videotaped 4 days before September 11th, and when September 11th happened, as I watched the buildings fall, I was personally convinced that that was the excuse they were going to use for martial law. I'm very surprised that they have not announced it, but a lot of laws since then have been passed, and I think that people across America are beginning to realize that with an economic crisis, the military may be sent in to quell civil unrest. You should have a large supply of food. You should convert, you know, your liquid money to, you know, precious metals, gold, silver, and lead. And naturally, the lead is there to protect the gold and silver. If you don't have guns and ammo, it's going to be more difficult for you to survive.
Do you ever think that, I know that one of the criticisms that the people in the Patriot movement get is by saying such a thing, we're actually inciting it to occur. I reject that. I'm assuming you do as well. But what would your response be to someone that says, listen, this isn't a problem. You're creating the problem. You're getting people all worked up.
If I look up in the sky and I see black clouds forming and I say, I think it's going to rain, my comments are simply an observation of reality and not a predisposition. I cannot create things to happen. I mean, it's not a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you deny that things are bad in the United States, if you deny that the economy is about to crash, then you are in denial. And you are more of a problem because people will not prepare. When it does happen, people will not be prepared. They will be without food. They'll be without protection. And they won't be able to barter in the underground economy that springs forth afterwards. So, you know, I am just trying to alert people to the potential danger.
Well, Michael, I am proud to have you as one of my friends. I'm thrilled that you're on the program. For those of you who are not familiar with it, Michael's written a great book that is still available and out there. It's called Good to Be King. Michael, is that still available on your website?
It is. I need to put it back on my website. My website is being redesigned and should be available within a week.
So, and is that going to still be at the old URL, constitutionpreservation.org?
I'm not changing the name. I'm only changing the furniture.
Well, we will put the new URL up in the show notes so people can find you. Also, being the terrible self-promoter that I am, I should have mentioned at the beginning of the program that all of your constitutional lectures are available on our website, commonsensejeff.com. I hope that you're going to be a regular on this program, Michael. Wish you nothing but continued health and the best.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Keep lighting the fires of liberty.
So what's the significance of this event when taken in the larger context of the Constitution and our constitutional rights? We'll discuss that next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Paradigm Shift. Helping you change the way you think one topic at a time. Welcome back to Paradigm Shift. I'm Jeff Williams. So now let's get back to the Second Amendment. You know, I'm very much a jeans and t-shirt kind of guy, and one of my favorite shirts, not to mention the shirt that I own that elicits the most dirty looks in the college community in which I reside, has the emblems of Nazi Germany, Communist China, and the Soviet Union on it. And the text is, "The experts all agree, gun control works." Well, I don't think this shirt is funny. It's clever. And the reason why I don't think it's funny is because of the truth behind it. In the totalitarian governments of those nations where guns have been confiscated since 1929, this is just in the 20th century, 56 million people have been rounded up and exterminated. 56 million. In comparison, 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust of World War II. Remember that number. Now, Paradigm Shift is not strictly intended as a gun rights show, but we have been discussing this topic in depth today. And as I've mentioned several times, I really believe that the Second Amendment is the single most important amendment of the Bill of Rights, and possibly among the most profound 27 words ever written in the history of modern democratic civilizations. And this is where I feel that gun ownership advocates really blow their arguments and count the NRA among them. The NRA spends a huge amount of time promoting the shooting sports and hunter safety, but we need an immediate reality check. For far too long, we have moderated our Second Amendment arguments in sports and in hunting. And the Second Amendment has nothing to do with either. And the sooner that we frame our arguments accurately, regardless of how politically incorrect that argument may be, the better off we will be. The Second Amendment exists so that we may kill those who attempt to rob us of our liberty. Blunt enough for you? So let's talk about the Founding Fathers and their intent for us with the Second Amendment. James Madison wrote, "Do not separate text from historical background. If you do, you will have perverted and subverted the Constitution, which can only end in a distorted, bastardized form of illegitimate government." So let's talk about history. Here's Congressman Ron Paul with some of his thoughts on our Founding Fathers and the Second Amendment.
Well, the Founders were very clear about it, and the assumption went without saying that everybody can have a gun to go out hunting because everybody was a hunter. But they wanted to be explicit that individuals owned guns because they never wanted to have the populace disarmed. Matter of fact, they encouraged and they believed that each community and each state would have a militia, which was just a group of people who could be called up in an emergency to be deputized for protection. But the gun really was, that Second Amendment was provided ironically, and a lot of people don't understand this, but it was to protect against abuse of government, because they needed guns to protect against the abuse of the king. They saw the Second Amendment as very, very important. Of course, I see it as so important because I think it was the lack of respect for the Second Amendment that contributed a whole lot to the disaster of 9/11. Because if individuals are responsible to defend themselves or their property, my guess is that if the government hadn't taken over security on the airlines, maybe the airlines would have said that a pilot could have kept a pistol up front. Uh-huh. And don't let anybody mess around. But unfortunately, before 9/11, they weren't allowed to have guns. They're still really not allowed. At the same time, the government told us not to resist.
Right.
So they did exactly the opposite. No wonder, well, this was an opening for people who wanted to do us harm. But the Second Amendment is crucial. And if you think about it, you know, the lack of respect for the Second Amendment is in the areas of our country that needs the Second Amendment the most. And this is, to me, so discriminatory, and that's in our inner cities. You go to the inner cities where there's the most crime, and yet if you're a law-abiding citizen, you're not allowed to defend against the crime.
Right.
So you're not allowed to have a gun in the inner city. So this, to me, is discriminatory. And, of course, there's a lot of laws against guns and drugs, and yet you have more violence in so many inner cities. So I think a respect for the Second Amendment would go a long way to helping cut down on the violence and the killing of innocent people in many of our inner cities throughout the country.
But don't take my word for this, or his word. How about the word of Thomas Jefferson? The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as a last resort, to protect themselves against tyranny in government. How about Thomas Paine? Arms discourage and keep the invader and plunderer in awe and preserve order in the world as well as property. Horrid mischief would ensue were the law-abiding deprived of the use of them. And how about Patrick Henry? The Constitution is not an instrument for the government to restrain the people. It is an instrument for the people to restrain the government. What better way to restrain the government than by owning firearms? You know, I can respect a logical, well-reasoned, philosophical argument, even if I don't agree with the conclusion. However, I have yet to hear an anti-gun argument that was anything other than a steaming pile of crap. Quotes taken out of context, commas turned into constitutional arguments, and like Madison wrote, the separation of text from the historical background. Here's a great word-by-word, blow-by-blow breakdown from the Showtime series, Bullshit. Here's libertarian commentator Penn Jillette.
Read the words. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, sure, you need an organized military force to defend your country, but the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is the people, in contrast with the militia. It doesn't say the right of the militia to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It says the right of the people. Now, why the word people? Because the people who wrote this had just fought a war for 2 years against a tyrannical state militia. They knew the time might come when they'd have to do that again. So they made the possession of weapons a right that the militia could never take away. Now, gun control advocates say the phrasing is clumsy, and the comma separating the state from the people is just a pause to get your breath. Strange, they can't seem to point out any other places where those hack framers f***ed up the wording.
Now let's focus in on some of the tired old arguments. Anti-gun types focus on the militia arguments time and time again, and quite frankly, they're just wrong. It doesn't matter if they're misinformed or sociopathic liars. For what it's worth, I think they're liars. But here are the facts. First, the Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. The Militia Acts weren't ratified until May 2, 1792, and even then, the militia was simply defined as each and every free, able-bodied white male citizen of the respective states resident therein who is or shall be of age of 18 years and under the age of 45 years. Now it's hard to argue that point because that's basically every guy. So then the anti-gun morons will deflect from that argument and then claim that what militia really meant was National Guard. And this is a completely nonsensical argument because even the slightest amount of research shows conclusively that the National Guard was created by the Dick Act January 21st, 1903. So unless the founders had a time-traveling DeLorean, why in the world would they refer to a military force that wouldn't even exist for 112 years? And why would the founders use such specific language when discussing the Bill of Rights to keep and bear arms as a protective measure against tyranny? Then there's the anti-gun argument that says anyone who thinks we could take on a modern army in a poop-hits-the-fan situation with relatively small munitions is fooling themselves. And in the current reality, that may be correct, which is a perfect argument why 23,000 unconstitutional federal gun laws have put our republic at risk. If I want to own fully automatic weapons or hand grenades or an M1A1 Abrams tank, then since it's to prevent tyranny, That should be my right under the Constitution. Of course, the answer to all of this is simple and obvious. Read the Constitution. Read the Federalist Papers. Defend your Second Amendment rights relentlessly and without compromise. Don't beat around the bush and talk about shooting clays or hunting. Remember what I said. The Second Amendment exists so that we may kill those who attempt to rob us of our liberty. Be bold, relentless, and unapologetic in the recognition of this fact. Along these lines, I strongly recommend that you exercise your rights. Buy a handgun or a rifle and learn how to become proficient in their safe and responsible use. Go to an Appleseed event and become a rifleman. Read the law. Understand the law. Knowledge is power. And the best defense against a tyrannical government intent on overstepping its boundaries is knowing your rights and not being afraid to stand for them. And to those of you who abhor the Second Amendment, don't see owning a firearm as necessary, are offended by guns, etc., then here's my simple advice. Don't buy one. Liberals and progressives spout off about freedom of choice all the time, unless it's something they disagree with. So here's their opportunity to at least be consistent. You don't want a gun? Fine. Don't buy one. It's still a free country. But if a day ever comes that you try to take mine away, be prepared for me to turn them over, bullets first.
Wouldn't stricter gun laws stop horrible tragedies like Columbine?
Columbine would not have been prevented by more gun control. The fact of the matter is, nobody likes to talk about, is all the gun control laws already on the books that these kids broke, and the person who sold them firearms broke. None of them prevented Columbine.
You can't stop insane people from doing insane things by passing insane laws. That's insane.
A gun doesn't have fingers to pull its own trigger or a brain to commit murder or commit a crime. So the person who misuses that gun is the person who should be punished for the misuse. And punish them. Don't punish me. Don't punish the gun.
On the next episode of Paradigm Shift, we will be discussing 10th Amendment issues as well as using gold as a hedge against inflation and possibly hyperinflation. So make sure to subscribe via iTunes or the RSS aggregator of your choice, and we will see you then. You can contact me via email, commonsensejeff.com. Show notes are on commonsensejeff.com/podcast, and your listener comments and suggestions are always appreciated at 509-850-3355. That's 509-850-3355. In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its maximum hour of danger. This is that hour. You are that generation. Now is that moment. My name is Jeff Williams, and this has been a Paradigm Shift.
Well, thank you, Jeff Williams. I thought that was a very good show. I think this is essential for people to get their arms around this. I guess that was a pun. I didn't actually mean it. excuse me. But in places where I'm working right now, there is every legal right to develop a militia. But people are definitely demonizing the militia and so forth. And although people have that right and they're beginning to form a militia, their primary first effort is to do some research and to begin to start educating people about that. The Continental Congress, of course, defined militia as a constitutional defense force, well-trained and capable of defending the community. And that's what it is a constitutional defense force. I was reading on the history of the militia today. A couple other things about Jeff's show that I liked was you see a lot of kids wearing Mao t-shirts and Che Guevara t-shirts and so forth and so on. And, you know, people don't understand how many tens of millions of people have been murdered by communism. There is an interesting post up, video up about just everyone, frankly, just finally acknowledging that we have a communist in the White House and all of his advisors. So this is a very interesting time. We are going to have a preview or a show on Paradigm Shift, the next show for Jeff, probably sometime this weekend, and also focus on 10th Amendment issues. I'm trying to catch up with some of the issues I have not been able to cover in Revolution Radio. So at this point, I'm going to resume my discussion of the 5,000-year leap, which is really the leap that brought America to where it is, the first ever experiment of the governing by the people, for the people, the United States Constitution, the Constitution for the United States. It's Leon Sklauzen. I'm going to play the title and then move right into the introduction. I then will probably come back for a little music and a little more commentary and then kind of close out the evening with a hearty farewell. So here's the title.
The 5,000-year leap. 28 ideas that changed the world by W. Cleon Skousen. Published by the National Center for Constitutional Studies. This book is dedicated to that generation of resolute Americans whom we call the Founding Fathers. They created the first free people to survive as a nation in modern times. They wrote a new kind of constitution, which is now the oldest in existence. They built a new kind of commonwealth designed as a model for the whole human race. They believed it was thoroughly possible to create a new kind of civilization, giving freedom, equality, and justice to all. Their first design for a free people nation was to encompass all North America, accommodating, as John Adams said, 200 to 300 million freemen. They created a new cultural climate that gave wings to the human spirit and encouraged exploration to reveal the scientific secrets of the universe. They built a free enterprise culture to encourage industry and prosperity. They gave humanity the needed ingredients for a gigantic 5,000-year leap. Introduction. Colonies of civilized human beings have been emerging and disappearing on the continental fringes of the planet Earth for over 5,000 years. Each of these ganglia of civilized mankind had similar aspirations, but none fulfilled them, at least not in their fullest dimensions. Some built cities for over 1 million people that now lie buried in the skeletal debris of the Sahara Sands. Others built cities that were even larger in Asia and South America, but snakes, rodents, and entangled vines are about all that live today in the ghostly grandeur of their ruined past. A new beginning. It was in AD 1607 that another such attempt was made to lay the foundation for man's most modern civilization. Undoubtedly, the annals of humankind will ultimately show that this one turned out to be different. The settlement was called Jamestown, after His Royal Highness James I, King of England. It was the first permanent colony of England on the North American continent. The settlers of Jamestown had been assigned the task of establishing an Anglo-Saxon foothold in the hot, humid, and totally hostile wilderness of what we now call Virginia. Shades of the primitive past. The most striking thing about the settlers of Jamestown was their startling similarity to the ancient pioneers who built settlements in other parts of the world 5,000 years earlier. The whole panorama of Jamestown demonstrated how shockingly little progress had been made by man during all of those 50 centuries. The settlers of Jamestown had come in a boat, no larger and no more commodious than those of the ancient sea kings. Their tools still consisted of shovel, axe, hoe, and a stick plow, which were only slightly improved over those of China, Egypt, Persia, and Greece. They harvested their grain and hay grass with a similar primitive size. They wore clothes made of thread spun on a wheel and woven by hand. They thought alcohol was a staple food. Their medicines were noxious concoctions based on superstition rather than science. Their transportation was by cart and oxen. Most of them died young. Out of approximately 9,000 settlers who found their way to Old Jamestown, only about 1,000 survived. Why Jamestown was different? But potentially, Jamestown was different. It was in Jamestown that communal economics were experimentally tried out by these European immigrants, who found them to be worse than Plato had described them. Eventually, it was in Jamestown that a system of free enterprise principles began to filter up through the years of starving time to impress on the settlers those dynamic ideas which were later refined and developed in Adam Smith's famous book, The Wealth of Nations. It was among these early settlers of Virginia that a sufficiently large population finally congregated to permit the setting up of the first popular assembly of legislative representatives in the Western Hemisphere. The descendants of these Virginia settlers also produced many of the foremost intellects who structured the framework for the new civilization, which became known as the United States of America. From among them came Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence, James Madison, father of the Constitution, George Washington, hero general of the War for Independence, George Mason, author of the first American Bill of Rights in Virginia. Virginia was the largest of the 13 colonies, with 500,000 inhabitants, and she furnished 4 of the 5 first presidents of the United States. 200 years later, soon 2 whole centuries had passed into history. By 1976, the noble experiment of American independence and free enterprise economics had produced some phenomenal results. One need not be an American citizen to feel a sense of genuine pride in the fantastic list of achievements which bubbled up from the massive melting pot of humanity that swarmed to the shores of this new land and contributed to its mighty leap in technical, political, and economic achievement. The spirit of freedom which moved out across the world in the 1800s was primarily inspired by the fruits of freedom in the United States. The climate of free market economics allowed science to thrive in an explosion of inventions and technical discoveries which, in merely 200 years, gave the world the gigantic new power sources of harnessed electricity, the internal combustion engine, jet propulsion, exotic space vehicles, and all the wonders of nuclear energy. Communications were revolutionized, first by the telegraph, then the telephone, followed by radio and television. The whole earth was explored from pole to pole, even the depths of the sea. Then men left the earth in rocket ships and actually walked on the moon. They sent up a space plane that could be maneuvered and landed back on the earth. The average length of life was doubled. The quality of life was tremendously enhanced. Homes, food, textiles, communications, transportation, central heating, central cooling, world travel, millions of books, a high literacy rate, schools for everybody, surgical miracles, medical cures for old age diseases, entertainment at the touch of a switch, and instant news 24 hours a day. That was the story. Of course, all of this did not happen just in America, but it did flow out primarily from the swift current of freedom and prosperity which the American founders turned loose into the spillways of human progress all over the world. In 200 years, the human race had made a 5,000-year leap. What about progress in reverse? Unfortunately, every new generation of human beings seems to feel the instinctive and passionate necessity to reinvent the sociological wheel. The physical sciences capitalize on the lessons of the past, but the social sciences seldom do. In political and social relations, a single generation will sometimes duplicate the same error half a dozen times. Too many human beings are doing it today. They are muddling their lives with drugs, riots, revolutions, and terrorism, predatory wars, unnatural sexual practices, merry-go-round marriages, organized crime, neglected and sometimes brutalized children, plateau intoxication, debt-ridden prosperity, and all the other ingredients of insanity which have shattered 20 mighty civilizations in the past. These elements of social decay can have a devastating impact on the highly technical and delicately interdependent civilization which freedom and prosperity have brought to mankind. Time to get back to basics. The goal of life is not really space travel, backyard swimming pools, glider planes, entertainment extravaganzas, big, fast cars, or thrill pills. What human beings are really seeking is individual happiness, self-realization. Human happiness thrives only in a certain kind of environment. The prerequisites for that environment are being destroyed. Many millions of people do not understand what is happening to them. They just know they are not genuinely happy. The answer to most of the problems is comparatively simple. Return to fundamentals. Get back to basics. Nothing in this life is ever going to be perfect, but it can be much more gratifying and a lot less dangerous if we can get back to the fundamentals that provided that amazing 5,000-year leap in the first place. That is what this book is all about. The 28 great ideas that helped change the world. There was hardly a single idea which the American founding fathers put into their formula that someone hadn't thought of before. However, the singularity of it all was the fact that in 1787, when the Constitution was being written, none of those ideas was being substantially practiced anywhere in the world. It was in America that the founding fathers assembled the 28 great ideas that produced the dynamic success formula which proved such a sensational blessing to modern man. Now that many of those precious principles are fading into oblivion and scores of unnecessary problems have risen to plague humanity, it should be in America that the banner of human hope is raised again. Of course, we should remind ourselves that it took the founders 180 years, 1607 to 1787, to put it all together, and they made numerous mistakes along the way. Nevertheless, when they finally put the new charter into operation, George Washington was able to write after only 2 years, quote, "The United States enjoy a scene of prosperity and tranquility under the new government that could hardly have been hoped for," end of quote. The next day he wrote to David Humphreys, quote, "Tranquility reigns among the people with that disposition towards the general government which is likely to preserve it. Our public credit stands on that high ground which 3 years ago it would have been considered as a species of madness to have foretold." End of quote. Not only did it change the United States, but within a few years it aroused the admiration of the whole world. experience to prove these principles were sound. They are sound today. In our modern space age of Third Encounters and Superman, the Founders' thinking may sound terribly old-fashioned and even pre-Victorian, but their principles have the advantage of an impressive track record of empirical proof that they are practical and true, eternally true. That is their primary credential. Our purpose is to present the Founders' 28 great ideas in their original simplicity, and mostly in their own words. After all, it is their story. They are the ones who made the fantastic 5,000-year leap possible.
Well, that's the introduction, first part. And I do have all the chapters of this book, and we can definitely go through this and tape it, or so you can download it. But it is important. I think that one of the issues I've been working on my blog, drkatesview.wordpress.com, is what happened to those principles and that wonderful document that leapt us forward as we implemented that document. What happened to it? And where did it begin to unravel? And I'm beginning to trace it back. I guess, you know, tyranny has always been an enemy of freedom and liberty. And so nobody wanted these ideas coming forward. But you can start looking at this from the standpoint of the Civil War and then the advance of progressivism, science, Darwinism, the undermining of the Constitution to Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, to Wilson, who was the first president to openly speak disparagingly about the Constitution. But it's an interesting mixture of how the Constitution came to be viewed as Darwin would view a society, is that it evolves with time. It was a living thing. That's how we got to this quite erroneous concept of a living constitution, which means you can, it means what it means today to whoever is in charge. On the other hand, our constitution has a very good mechanism through which it lives, and that is amendments, and through representation that helps it make work better. It helps it work better, makes it work better, and through the people's responsibility. You know, we're all pointing fingers at what's wrong with the government that's gone out of control, but when you point a finger at anyone, notice your hand, three fingers point back at yourself. Yet in all that, we cross that bridge right now that the founders have crossed and we're crossing, and perhaps they speak to us now. We can hope they can. But it is our challenge now to revolve back to the Constitution and constitutional governance. So before I finish this show with just a couple more things, I'd like to play Fanfare for the Common Man, Aaron Copland, because it's a celebration of us. Here we go.
Thank you. freedom buried in the ground. Mother Earth will swallow you, lay your body down.
The tree of liberty must be watered every now and again with the blood of both tyrants and patriots. It's its natural fertilizer. It's natural fertilizer. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me. I send you now home with 100 hearts. Blessings. God bless America. God bless our troops. Pray for our soldiers. Good evening.
Thank you.